Everybody, my name is Noah. I'm an alcoholic. And I've been sober since August 26th, 1996. I've got a home group, which is a, well, most of you know what that is, but for anybody that doesn't, home group is a place where I am expected to be on the regular. I've got service at, and there's a very, has to be unusual circumstances for me to not be there. And I have a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor. We have a 9:30 a.m. Monday morning appointment because he lives out of town. And most of the time, I take a little inventory before I give him a call. And that connection is supremely important to me. It doesn't mean that I make that call every Monday because I'm imperfect. And I started a new job back in September, and I was too afraid to call at 9:30. So I got to work at 9 o'clock, and it felt weird, like walking out and trying to find some weird place. And the office space that I was working in, I had a desk that was about this big. And there was another dude here with a desk about that big. And so it took me a little while to get back on making that phone call. And there were some people in the room that noticed my beautiful wife is here that, because quite honestly, our conversations are rarely mind blowing, but the context from outside of myself is hugely valuable. And when I'm not getting that, you want to know who my sponsor is? This guy. And I'm not good at that. But I'm happy to say that's been pretty regular again here the last at least few months. And so my very first AA meeting was a Tuesday night. And I walked in there and I was trying to avoid all of these people that were outside, because they were all laughing and giggling and having fun. And none of them were like 300-year-old women, which is what I thought AA was going to be. Nobody was wearing trench coats. And so I knew that that was not the AA meeting. And when I had walked around the church, I had seen lights on in the basement, and there were like a bunch of like musical instruments. And I was like, they must be some sort of church band, which means they're all good people and want nothing to do with me. And I was 100% wrong. I wandered the church, went into the wrong room, eventually was told where to go, and walked into that room with all of those people there. And in that meeting, there was at least one guy that picked up a chip for 1 year. And I thought, who the hell doesn't drink for a whole year? That's ridiculous. And it dawned on me not long ago that that thought in and of itself should have been a hint, because I knew that I wasn't alcoholic. I knew that I didn't belong here. And I knew that that whatever this silly crap is that you guys are doing is not for me. Which is hilarious, because a lot of you were starting to get better. A lot of you were, you know, making amends with people and improving relationships with friends and family and keeping jobs and things like that. And I had just lost two jobs. I had lost a volunteer thing that I absolutely loved. I had lost my place to live. I lost my girlfriend. And I didn't know it at that moment, but I had pretty much lost the entire circle of friends that I had built in the physical area that I was living and working at that time. I had been, again, I didn't know this, but I had been working very hard on alienating all of those people for the last prior, you know, 2-3 years anyway. And I did not know it, but I was on my way to being really alone. And so I go to this meeting. I'm judging you because, you know, of how outrageously cool I am. And happened to sit next to this young lady, the only seat that was available. She gave me a big book. I was like, well, we all know what that means. Which, because I had a ton to offer, right? I had lots to offer this young lady. Which is a joke in case anybody's unclear. I had absolutely nothing to offer whatsoever. I was looking at 2 to 5 years in jail. Like I said, I had no job. I had no place to live. And if it weren't for my folks, I'd have been homeless, because I was 22 when I got sober, and my folks let me move back in with them. I had kind of been on my own for the most part since I was about 19. And so I moved back down to Virginia and moved in with my folks, and promptly started giving my parents crap for the rules that they were imposing on me, because I was eating for free, living for free, And I thought that was thoroughly unfair that they wanted things for that. And it turned out that that night, so my last drink was on the 25th of August, and it was probably 2 or 3 days later when like got arrested and the court, the arraignment and all that kind of stuff, and then eventually got kicked out, lost the job, all that. So it was a few day, handful of days later, I was back down with mom and dad, and so I it, by that time I'd been sober, not drinking, for a handful of days. Got a lawyer. Lawyer said that I should, go to anger management. I yelled that, slammed my fist on the desk. I don't need anger management, which is another hint that I missed completely. And this anger management counselor met with me and my parents, my little brother, and and us all separately, and recommended Alcoholics Anonymous. And that seemed a little extreme, I guess, because looking back on it, I wasn't doing anything different than everybody else that I was hanging out with. Like, and I had this pic, I was 22, I had this picture of an alcoholic, like I said, like trench coat under a bridge, that sort of thing. And that was not where I was at. I also assumed that an alcoholic had this like conscious and nagging urge to need to drink. And that was also not my experience. Now, given an opportunity to drink or not drink, I drank. But it didn't feel like a compulsion. It didn't feel like I wasn't sitting places like, I need to get something. I need to, it wasn't like that at all. But it was motivating. I got up and I figured out who can hang out. Because I know if you drink before noon, that's weird. And that could be a problem. And I clearly don't have a problem, so we're going to wait till noon. And I know if you drink alone, that that's a problem. And I don't have a problem, so I need to find somebody to drink with at noon. Which, saying it out loud, is insane. But those were the facts. And and that's kind of how I was living my life. And that was what I was doing. So I wind up at this meeting, and this guy hasn't had a drink for a year, gets a chip, everybody claps. This attractive girl next to me is obviously into me. And the basket goes around, and I'm like, oh, church crap. Now I get it. They want money, they want, someone's gonna save me or whatever it was. And as the meeting went on, people were talking about alcoholism. Because there were a bunch of people in that meeting who were super interested in the traditions, or perhaps at that time their sponsors were interested in the traditions, and they were in the process of doing that. And they were starting the traditions meetings and starting to talk about and pay attention to those sorts of things. And I'm immensely glad. I'm very grateful for that, because I am, the book talks about like the pure alcoholic. I'm one of those. I've done no drugs, I've smoked no weed, and and I am outrageously grateful that when I went to an AA meeting, they talked about alcoholism, because I already knew I didn't belong here, and I already knew that y'all were stupid. And so when I heard people talking about things like being in a room full of people and feeling all alone, I knew exactly what they were talking about. And when I heard them talk about that room changing after a few drinks, I knew exactly what they were talking about. And they talked about drinking when they didn't want to. And that one I didn't relate to right at first, because I just changed my mind a lot. And it took me a while till somebody explained, like, did you say I'm not drinking tonight and then wind up drinking? I was like, well, yeah. I was like, yeah, but I just changed my mind. Like, I'm not powerless. I just changed my mind. And quite honestly, that is what powerless looks like for me, is I just changed my mind. I had a plan. There was a really good reason to not drink. Often, well, sometimes there was a really good reason, sometimes there wasn't. But at the end of the day, I wound up getting drunk by accident anyway. And it wasn't every day. There were days that I didn't drink. I went 3 weeks once, had a physical altercation with a young lady that I was living with. And, and she said that she probably had a drinking problem. And so I was like, well, out of my intense love and care for you after our physical altercation. I'm also not going to drink, which lasted 3 whole weeks. Because after 3 weeks, she went out with the girls one night, and I went out with the guys. And on the other side of changing my mind is also changing the rules. It's like, well, she's not here. Like, that doesn't count, right? And I got drunk and, I decided I need to find her where she is with those girls because I know she's up to no good. I don't know if this is alcoholism or not, but when I am behaving in a certain way, I know you are. And so if I am being dishonest and if I am being unfaithful, I know you are. And I am super angry about it. Don't worry about what I'm doing. You're in trouble because I'm angry, which, always ends great. So I wound up doing some more dumb crap that night and getting in a little bit more trouble, not specifically with the law necessarily, but got in more trouble, did some, damage that I had to repay later and whatnot, and, just living the good life. And so I, like I said, I got arrested. Lawyer said 2 to 5 years. I get to this first AA meeting and people are talking about alcoholism. And they're talking about, the feeling that, because they were saying things that they were saying things that I experienced, but that nobody else had ever said. There was a guy named Matt that I used to work with, and we worked at a fire station together, and he had his truck parked in the back. And Matt and I were not going anywhere, but we went out back and sat in his truck. And he opened up 6 beers and put them on the dash, and I was like, why do you do that? And he said, because it lets the fizz out so I can drink them faster. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Because beer makes me so full so fast. That's why I like for me, call me a sissy if you want. I was a huge fan of the Long Island iced tea because, man, they went down smooth and fast and they were cost effective. I spent every dime that I had on booze or other things and never worried about that money. But like, well, how many beers is it? How much is it per beer? The most cost-effective thing I ever found was was a place called Wanda's that I would go to. It was called the One-Eyed Monkey. And it was a 1 gallon bucket that had like 20 different shots of different liquors in it. And my poor wife, not alcoholic, she's like, that's disgusting. for some reason, it came with like a whole gaggle of straws, which seemed ridiculous. But it was by far the most cost-effective beverage there was. And so you took 19 of the 20 straws out and I had a beverage for the night and it was solid. Eventually, I also started bringing bottles in the car. So I would go out to my car to like get a cigarette and then like a couple of slugs, put it back because, at busy places, you got to wait to go to the bar. I have never been a hot girl. And so like, nobody's trying to like get me a beverage and, and so like, I had to do what I had to do. And to me, I'm just brilliant. And I'm Matt smart, right? Cracking open all those beers. I have never in my life cracked open like 2 Sprite cans to get the fizz out so I could drink them faster. At that meeting, I started meeting a bunch of people because after the meeting, I was interested in talking with the young lady who had given me the book. And she wanted to introduce me to her boyfriend, which was awkward and inconvenient. And all of a sudden, these like 8, 10, 12 guys were around me. They were trying to get my number. They were trying to find out if I had a sponsor, how long I've been sober, what's my home group. And I was like, wow, these dudes are weird. These dudes are super weird. One guy said, maybe, you know, if you want, you can come over to my house for dinner and then we can ride together to the meeting, which today now is like, that's awesome. I would love to do that. Right. But then I was, I literally told him, I was like, dude, I'm not looking for a date. And he was a little surprised by that. That guy's still sober because he still is eagerly trying to find the newcomer. Right. And I see that guy on Tuesday nights pretty regularly. And, and he, hopefully he doesn't listen because he hates that story. So I've at least stopped using his name. So, but yeah, but I'm very grateful. And honestly, like he's a super good guy and he's and a really good AA. And, but that did a couple things. One, it set the example eventually for what it looks like, right? And what getting out of myself looks like. And it also got me a bunch of people who had my phone number who called me. And a bunch of people convinced me to go to the meeting the following night. And I went to the meeting the following night. And a bunch of people did the same thing. And it was irritating. But one thing that had happened at that meeting that first night was I had this thought, because they were talking about alcoholism, and we were talking about the second step also, is that maybe this thing that is wrong with me, because I knew something was wrong. Maybe this, whatever this is that these people are doing, maybe this is what's wrong with me. Because my parents, like they, my dad was in the military for 27 years. My mom was a secretary and marketing communications, all that kind of stuff. You know, never been to jail. I don't think either of them have ever known anybody that had been arrested, as far as I know, until I did. I had a conversation early on when I was in college with my dad, because I was really tight with him. We still are really tight. And I told him, I was like, yeah, I drank so much I threw up last night, like, you know, night two in college. And he's like, yep, I did that one time and I never drank that much again. And I was like, me neither. That, which I meant, I 100% meant it. But once again, I changed my mind. Guess what happened that night? Yeah. Damn right I did. Puking again, wondering, how did this happen? And so one of my goals when I was going out started being, got to drink as much as possible because it's so much fun, but got to not puke, which is totally insane. Like imagine like, hey, we're going to go to a barbecue place for dinner tonight. Like I'm going to eat as much barbecue as I can, trying not to throw up. That's nuts. But that is literally the way that I was, you know, people were talking about like, oh, you got to eat before you don't get as sick or eat. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And that was the only like modicum of control that I tried to put on myself. And even that didn't work because I still did it a fair bit. And so, I wind up, so that was a Tuesday night, was my first meeting. Thursday night, there's this guy, his name was Lynn. And Lynn kept talking to me and asking me, like, do you have a sponsor? Are you gonna get a sponsor? Do you know what a sponsor is? I'm like, Jesus, I thought he got a commission or something, like a used car salesman. And finally I was like, fine, you do you want to be my sponsor? He's like, you have to ask me. But here's the problem, or maybe the unproblem. I was so uncomfortable and so alone and so desperate for something different that I asked him. And then he said, are you willing to follow directions? And it made me even more angry. But I lied and said, of course, which certainly wasn't true. But that started a relationship with a sponsor, which then he wanted me to call him. I was like, I don't even know this guy. Like, what do I? So I call him up. I'm like, hey. He's like, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, great. Which everybody knows is a lie, right? I'm in like my fifth meeting. Things are not going great. And, you know, and so he started having me do a 10 step. Very simple, pluses and minuses. And I had to write him down, and then I would call him. The other huge thing that happened is he sponsored a couple other dudes, and he lived with a couple of guys, two or three other guys. So the guys that he sponsored started becoming my buddies because we started riding around to meetings together all over the place. And the guys that he was roommates with, we started riding around to meetings together. And I happened to have a car. And my friend Drew, who a bunch of folks here know, Drew had a brand new Acura. But Drew needed me to drive him to meetings. And I knew that Drew was going to drink and die if I didn't get him because he's a good salesman. And I think I'm smart, but I'm not. And I started picking Drew up. Then Drew had service commitments everywhere all the time. And I would go pick Drew up at 6 o'clock for the 8:30 meeting. And we would set up the chairs. And then we'd make coffee. And then another night we would do another thing. Another night we were picking up the chairs and putting them away. Another night we were mopping the floor. And or sometimes we were doing half of those things each night. And something else happened that I didn't know was occurring, which was I was starting to get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was starting to build relationships with people. So service for me has been immensely helpful because it helps me start and build relationships with people with whom I would not be interested in talking to or hanging out with. And so it has become a huge part of my sobriety. The other thing that I found out when I was about 17 years sober is service, as silly as it may seem, helps me show up. I know for a fact that if I don't bring cookies to whatever meeting I'm supposed to bring cookies to, no one's going to die. Nobody's going to drink. Somebody else is probably going to bring cookies. However, when I was about 17 years sober, a bunch of the meetings that I was going to, I was often, either, longest sober or in that, of just a couple of folks sober longer. And so if I raised my hand for a service position, I almost always got it. And I thought I was being altruistic, but I was not. And I decided myself, no sponsor intervention whatsoever, that I'm going to let some of these new folks get service positions. I know I'm always going to be of service. So I didn't raise my hand for anything that night. It was a Wednesday night, up the tubes. And I didn't, and then over the next few weeks, or however long it took for this rotation to occur, I did the same thing at a whole gaggle of meetings. Now at Tubes, I would wind up standing at the back of the meeting and hanging out with the service coordinator, which is the guy at that meeting at least, where if someone didn't show up for service, he would say, "Hey man, can you get the trash?" And I would hang out with that dude, knowing that I was going to get assigned something, or I would see something that needed to be done, and I would go do it. The problem was, I was becoming a huge deal at work, according to me. So I was working late. I was doing incredibly important things. I was saving the world, and nobody else could do it but me. And so I would get home, and but because I have to go home because I let the dog out. And so I let the dog out. Get a little bit of food, and I'm like, I'm definitely gonna be late to the meeting. I'm gonna have a piece of cake. And I would get to the meeting late. And as time went on, I wound up sometimes saying, ah, screw it, I'll be there next week. Right. And that happened without me knowing more and more and more often. And it's so funny. Every time I think I'm really smart, I really feel like I should tell myself the story. But I called my sponsor with one of those, like, I don't know what's wrong. Just something's not right. And he's like, well, how many meetings are you going to? And I was like, well, like 5 or 6 a week, which had been true. But when I actually started counting, it was one. Well, but last week it was one, Jesus, and it kind of went like that. And so he's like, well, you should meet me tonight at Promises. And Promises was in Maryland. And I had, for no reason whatsoever, I did not like Promises. I was at Promises the day that meeting started and went there for a decade at least, and then decided I don't like this meeting. And so when he told me to come up there, I was like, oh, it's the worst thing ever. It's like 3 minutes across, it's like 3 minutes across the river, which is at that time 20 minutes, 30 minutes maybe from my house. And I drive 45 minutes to meetings all the time. And so I go there, talk to my sponsor, and meeting happens. After the meeting, there's a group conscience. I made a terrible mistake. I told a friend of mine that what was going on. Unbelievable. And so there's at the group conscience, they're looking for volunteers. And there's no chance I'm volunteering at this meeting. And my friend, who is huge, grabs my hand and raises it. Felt like a child. I was a little angry. I have no chance with this guy. There was no chance I was getting my arm down either. Not going to happen. And I got elected. And then after the meeting, the old chair came up and started telling me about the job. And she was like, yeah, and it's a year-long commitment. All I had to do was find 52 leaders for the next year. And I was unhappy. But I also, luckily, have a huge ego. And I was like, I'm going to get the best damn leaders we've ever had. Going to schedule them 9 months in advance. And, all this, grandiose ridiculousness. And because I had to be there to introduce the leaders. So that was a meeting I had to get to. And one of the things that snapped, that happened for me very shortly thereafter was the recognition and tying together the fact that having these ridiculous service positions, whether it's the chair or just like secretary, or mopping or bringing a cookie or whatever it was, is immensely important to get my butt there when I don't feel like I want to, or I feel like I'm too important, or whatever the reason is that day. And I started getting service commitments again, and I've been saying yes to service like that ever since. I had been in service for a long, long, long time. I made this ridiculous decision for I don't even know how long, and then been doing it again ever since because it's outrageously important to me. A bunch of years ago, we were doing a men's advance, which I think some of you guys have been at. Dad, we were in Port Royal, Front Royal. The speaker called it Port Royal all the time. But we were in Front Royal for a bunch of years, and the speaker talked about taking a meeting into a prison where he was at. And that he had been in. And I was having one of those days of like, man, I really need a little more. I need something else here. And when he talked about that, I was like, I'm going to do that. And so I got on the phone and I called the local jail and I said, hey, I was hoping to do this. How does that work? And they gave me a phone number and I called a guy and I had to fill out paperwork and background check and all that kind of stuff. And I started taking a meeting. And then I found some other suckers. Luke was one of them. Like, hey, how do you feel about going into a jail with me? And a bunch of people wanted to do it. And eventually we had like 5 nights a week. We had two or three people a night taking a meeting into that jail. And the whole gaggle of us did that. I don't know how long. I mean, 12, 13 years, kind of till COVID hit almost. And that was fantastic. And that was a low probability of success spot, right? At least that's what it looked like to me. Because when I walked in there, I assumed that most of those guys just wanted to get out of their cell for an hour. But that wasn't necessarily true. There were guys there who were had been sober before and drank again. Some of them had been sober for a while and drank again. And they were in there and they were interested because they kind of knew what was up. Some guys were just there to, get some time out of the cell, I'm sure. There were a couple of surprises. My favorite surprise, I also goes part of a story where I thought I was going to witness a murder, but that didn't happen. There was a young guy in there, and apparently there was a bar across the street from the jail that if you bring AA chips there, they'll give you free beers for however many months your chips are sober, which is hilarious. And so this guy was talking about how he's going to do that. And there's another guy there who had never said a word. About 6 weeks prior to this, that guy came up to us after the meeting. He'd been there for months and never said a word. And so the second guy came up to us and said, "Hey, I'm getting ready to go to prison for the rest of my life. Why do you, should I do this?" And I was like, "I don't know. It's a great question. It happened to be a weekend right before men's advance. And I went and saw the guy who talked about starting the jail meeting. And I said, "Hey, this guy just asked this question. What's your experience?" And he said, "Well, he can either keep doing the dumb shit he's been doing, or he can try something different, try to help another person." At first, I thought, of course. And then I thought, I was hoping for something deeper. But the following week, I went back and I told that guy exactly that. And he didn't say a word. He just sat back down and kept coming. So fast forward a handful of weeks, this other guy's talking about the chips and going to get some free drinks. That dude stands up and starts yelling at that guy about defending us, that what we're coming in there for and why we're there. And I thought that guy was going to kill that dude, which didn't happen. None of that happened. But like somebody was listening. And the other thing that happened with that jail meeting is very few people showed up. I made tons of plans to pick people up at a metro. I'm sure you did the same. To pick people up at the metro, or I'll pick you up at this place, or we'll meet you at this meeting, or whatever. And almost nobody ever showed. But one of the things that started happening is so I was answering the phones for Intergroup, Northern Virginia Intergroup. A guy called me telling me that he couldn't stop drinking. And I was like, "Well, do you want to stop?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "All right, well, pour stuff down the drain. And here's a meeting at 6 a.m. at the Unity Club, which is close to where you're at. Let's meet there." And he wanted to argue with me, which I'm not into that kind of argument. And I was like, "It's up to you. Like, but I'm not going to talk about this any longer. Either you want to do it or you don't want to do it." So he went and poured the booze out and did not make it to the 6 a.m. meeting. No idea what happened to that guy. However, I went into that 6 a.m. meeting, which I super didn't want to be at. There was a dude there who was like, "Noah." I had no clue who this guy was. He had been in the jail 6, 7, 8 years earlier. And remember my ugly mug. And he had been sober about 3 years. And, because I, like, you think I would learn, but I don't learn. The first guy that I ever sponsored, I was about 9 months sober. He asked me to sponsor him. And I was like, "Well, of course." And then I called my sponsor. What the hell do I do? And that guy didn't stay sober. And then a couple of years later, he showed up at a meeting, or I bumped into him wherever it was. And he had been sober 2 years. And, how is it possible that somebody stays sober without me? It didn't make any sense. And the fact is that I'm obviously not necessary for that. There's a lot of people here sober that have no idea who I am and are doing great without knowing me. And so I know that to be true, but it's still one of those things that the ego holds on to, or my ego, I hold on to. But the important thing was that I had reached my hand out, and I had made tried to make Alcoholics Anonymous a comfortable place. I had tried to make somebody feel welcome. I didn't try to sell anybody, because that's what I was waiting for. I was waiting for the hard sell, right? When I talked about, like, "Oh, this is church crap," I was waiting for that hard sell. I was waiting for like $49.95 and it's all yours. And the vast majority of us now know that that's not the deal. There's no money needed. My sponsor did not sponsor me for any reason other than to hopefully become a a little bit less insane himself. And that is the reason that I do the things that I do, is to become a little bit less insane myself. You know, and that sponsor that I had, that I got early on, he made a pact with his girlfriend at the top of the Eiffel Tower. I'm sure it was outrageously romantic, that if I drink, you'll drink. And they pinky swore, or whatever it was they did. And they made that promise to each other. And so that guy was my sponsor for probably 9 months after whatever that happened. And I obviously, nobody knew that that was a thing. And the reason that I say this and tell this story is because it does not matter who my sponsor is. It doesn't matter. There's no like, oh, I need to find the right person or the right background or this did the same things or felt the same way. I did not need that. And the reason I say that is my sponsor was a crackhead. My first sponsor was a crackhead. I didn't even know that a crack pipe was a thing until I met some of the other dudes that he sponsored. And then he made this proclamation, or this promise with his then girlfriend, who was also sober, that they were going to drink, you know, one, if one drank, the other one would, which is clearly insane. And he continued to be my sponsor for another probably 9 months or so until he drank. And he told his girl at a Christmas party, told his girlfriend he drank, handed her a beer. She told him to go pound sand. I haven't seen her in a while, but the last I heard, which was probably 10, 12 years ago, she was still sober and doing great. And I tell that because clearly my sponsor at that time was not a rock star of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? However, I was taking recommendations from somebody else that were not my idea. And as far as I can tell, looking back on it, none of it was completely insane. And I did try to do those things. Sometimes I did them half-assed. Sometimes I said I did them and didn't. Sometimes I did them way after I said I had done them. And but I was making an effort. And it was that effort of doing something that somebody else recommended that was making the difference. And when I, and the reason that I got my sponsor who replaced him, who is still my sponsor today, is because he shared with me that he was uncomfortable when I was like 6 months sober. And he, we were at a Valentine's Day dance, and I had tried to kill my ex-girlfriend, which is why I got arrested. And all of the lovely young ladies at the Valentine's Day dance knew that. So with all these amazing things I had to offer at 6 months sober, nobody wanted to dance with me. And so I was a sad sack of potatoes. And somebody was dancing. One of my sponsor's friends was dancing with his girlfriend a little too close. And instead of starting something, he did something that to me is amazing. He went and found someone else that was more uncomfortable than he was, which was me. And just started talking to me. How am I doing? Told me that he was mad that, you know, so-and-so's dancing with his girlfriend. That dude wound up marrying his girlfriend later. But it's another story for another day. again, like, it doesn't matter if even if it's real. It's none of my business, right? That when I'm angry or I'm upset, that's on me. Even if whatever the other side is real, that's on me. And so he, the other thing that was going on with that is I thought that he was just super cool and chill and nothing bothered him, because he seemed so calm all the time. And when he told me that he was angry, I was like, whoa, because I'm angry all the time, especially at that point, all the time. And I have this idea, which I don't know where I got it from, that I'm not supposed to be angry. I'm just supposed to, like, be chill. Sorry, that was super weird. And I was not chill on the inside. And I, when Jack became my sponsor, I would call him and I'd tell him, I said, oh, I'm a little irritated by this thing. He's like, dude, if you're mad, say so. And he, I feel like he might have regretted that for a moment, because I was like, all right. And I told him, well, I don't remember what it was at that time. I'm sure it was incredibly important and valuable to the world. But at that time, I was super livid about something ridiculous, I'm sure. And, but it was the fact that he had shown his imperfection that made him attractive to me later. And so when someone poked me in the chest, told me I needed a new sponsor because my sponsor was drunk, I went directly to him and asked him to sponsor me. I walked away thinking, I've just made a serious mistake. That guy's sober forever. He'd been sober 7 years, which was forever. And I thought I had made an error in judgment because I don't think I'm going to be able to live up to whatever the hype is that I'm going to have to live up to that I don't even know what it is, but I'm not going to be able to do it. But I started working with him. We started going through the steps. We started meeting. We started going to meetings together. We started talking. Eventually I did an 8-step with him, which was probably a little too late. I treated it like homework for a while, and he is a big enough man to say, nah, bro. This is not the way it works. Try again. And he told me to read stuff, and I read it, and I speak English as my first language. But I did not, I was not finding the instructions. And he told me to ask somebody else. He said, why don't you ask Brendan? Brendan was my buddy. Brendan was the guy that I would go tell stuff to before I would tell my sponsor. And actually, he would not have told me Brendan, so disregard that entirely. That's a whole timing problem. I don't remember who it was that he told me, but Brendan, anyhow, he was a guy, he and I had the first sponsor together. And he would always tell my sponsor all the stuff that I told him. He's like, hey, did Noah tell you about the thing? I'm like, I was getting there. He got to give me a minute. So thank God for Brendan, because that made me really eager to get to my sponsor first and to tell him what was going on first, because it looks bad when that guy tells me. And I wanted to tell the sponsor what Brendan did. So it became a race, which is obviously ridiculous for grown people, but it helped. It helped me, right? It helped me start practicing being honest. So anyhow, so my sponsor started telling me to talk to other people about where in the book all these things are, right? And so they walked me through the 12 and 12. They walked me through the big book. And I finally did an 8-step that was real. And one of the big things that jumps out to me today in the 12 and 12 and the 8-step was where it talks about that. Oh, I don't remember the exact wording, I'm going to louse it up badly, but it's something along the lines of, although, making amends is paramount, it is equally important that we get as much information about ourselves as we can. Right. So to me, that's an inventory. Right? There's another inventory. Because for me, the fourth and fifth step, I did pretty early on in sobriety. And the only thing that jumped out to me from the fifth step was that I may have played a small role in my life, that I was not purely a victim of circumstance, right? That perhaps my attitudes and actions might have had an effect. But it was in the eighth step where I made the list of the actual harms that I had done, not the necessarily the actions, although those were important. It was the harms that those actions had caused, right? So, like my mom, for example, she knew that I was going to kill somebody someday, right? Because she knew I was angry, and she knew that I was liable to fly off the handle, and she was not worried about getting the call that I had been, driving drunk or got, hurt or fell off of something, hammered or whatever it was. She was worried about getting the call from the cops and saying, hey, we have your son here. He's killed somebody. That, I'm not a parent, but I cannot imagine what a mother has to go through thinking, worrying about that on a regular basis. But that's the harm that I caused, right? One of them, one of many, unfortunately. And I stole their money, I stole their peace of mind. So I went through this whole list of all these people. There were a bunch of girlfriends I was super looking forward to making amends to because I had a lot. I mean, look at me now, which is ridiculous. Most of them, my sponsor was like, they're doing great without you in their lives. And that is still true. So I'm happy to say. And, and, but that for me, that was the most effective inventory that I did, mostly because I spent time and effort and I cared about it. And something really weird and magical happened, which is the steps, they say something, and then I had that experience, right? That it talks about we became willing to make amends. And as I was doing that eighth step, and as I was putting great effort into it, all of a sudden, I realized, like, I do not want to do these things, but I am willing to, like, I see this, and I now want to get this mess cleaned up. And a lot of that stuff started with checks. There was one, the gal who I had tried to kill, I sent her a, I had stolen from her also because, you know, I'm very romantic. And so I sent her a check for the things that I had stolen. And I wrote her a letter that was sponsor approved. My sponsor 100% read any letter prior to sending it. My sponsor and I had conversations before any of the actual amends went forward. And I sent that out, and check got cashed. Haven't heard back yet. So, and again, that's not the point, right? And I kind of make a joke of it, but the point is not doing that. The point is trying to set right what was wrong, right? Not make me feel better, not for me to have closure or any of that kind of stuff. The point was to make an attempt to set those things right. The unfortunate thing in my mind now is I didn't really have a good grasp on the harms I had actually caused. When I was about, because that happened when I was probably those nine steps, I was probably 2 or 3 years sober, somewhere in that ballpark. And when I was about 10 years sober, I was standing at the podium of my home group telling my story. And I don't know if anybody else has done this, like you're talking about one thing, but thinking about something else. Hopefully I'm not the only one that does that. And I had this realization that I might have caused fear for the girl that I tried to kill and her family. It had never dawned on me that like, obviously, I was like, okay, I know that was wrong, right? I know. But the fact of, like, I'm trying to imagine what it would be like if somebody had treated somebody I love that way, and the fear and the anger and the rage that would have caused inside of me. And it had never dawned on me. And that is really, like, my drinking was not purposeful harm. I wasn't going out of my way to be a jackass or trying to hurt people or try, you know, I just was trying to have a good time. I wanted you to think of me a certain way. And I behaved appropriately to make that happen. And it most of the things that I did and most of the people I hurt, I was completely unaware. And unfortunately, my thinking is like that. And I can only assume that it has to do with very, you know, like, I'm sure nobody else here is like this, but, you know, severe self-centeredness. So my lovely bride is a flight attendant. And when we met on an airplane. And when, like, after we went out on our first date, it dawned on me, because I had flown a lot prior to this. It had never occurred to me that flight attendants and pilots have families and wives and girlfriends and things outside of the airplane. Never occurred to me. Now, nobody had ever asked. If someone had said, do you think flight attendants live somewhere? Of course. But it had never been on my radar, because I just basically didn't care about other people unless they had an impact on me, positive or negative. I didn't care, not at all on my radar. And, you know, and so, like, today, like, I'm still imperfect. My, you know, we were at dinner tonight, my wife and a couple of friends that drove up here. Thank you guys. And I don't remember who started this, but someone, you know, asked if there had been a fight, or my wife said, oh yeah, we haven't had a single fight this weekend. And I was like, well, yeah, that's true. And someone, Mike said, There was a fight. It was just between Noah and Noah, which this particular weekend, actually not true, but most of the time, 100% accurate. There's a lot of fights that we have, but she's not there for, which is probably better for everybody. But today, like my sobriety looks very, very similar to how it did early on. There are some differences. I got sober at 22. I really didn't have a job, and we were going to the diner every night. Like I said, I was leaving at 6 to set up with Drew, and then mopping till 10 o'clock, and then going to the diner, and then getting home at 2, and then getting up at 7 to go to work and do a terrible job at a job that my mom got me, and yelling at her boss, which did not go over well. She wanted me to staple stuff differently, and I thought that was ridiculous. So after I restapled, and I'm like, if you pull the staples out and you restaple it, it looks way worse than just stapling it at a different angle. And I think I'm super smart. And so I went in and it was, I don't remember what it was. It was like 500 things that had to be all stapled into threes. And so I redid those and I went in and like threw them across her desk, because no need to be truly aggressive when you can be passive aggressive. She's like, "Is there a problem?" And like the voice inside of me is like, "I'm glad you asked." And I told her what I thought. And I was 22. I had no job. I had no job prospects. My mom, at 22, got me this job. My mom works at that office right there. And I'm supposed to be sitting at the front desk making copies. And I'm telling the like chairperson of this association my opinion of her. Was bad times. And she took it like a champ. She turns out, she was sober like 28 years or 25 years or something like that, and took it like a champ, and didn't fire me and didn't fire my mom. I got fired there not long thereafter, but and then AA at work, I was living with this young lady, I should say living off of this young lady, and didn't have a job. Couldn't pay for my own food, doing great, and complaining about the food that she made because I'm amazing. And and my sponsor was like, "You should get a job at a temp agency." And I don't, I'm sure, like, I was pretty confident I am way too cool for that, because a temp agency means like a tie and like shoes and a cubicle and computers. And I was like, I'm good, which wasn't it, he wasn't saying it for me, And so eventually I was hungry and I went to a temp agency and I got this job, and they placed me at this little company, and they put me in a room that's about a third the size of this room, filled with paper, stacked like 2 feet high in some places on every horizontal surface. And the guy was like, "All right, anything more than 3 years old, shred it. Everything else, figure out a filing system." I'm like, I'm a genius, which isn't true, just for the record. Not true, 100% not true, but I think I am. And I was like, "This is, I can't believe this is what they want me to do." So I told my sponsor when I got home that night. I called him up. I was like, "Do you believe what they want me to do?" He's like, "Well, you should get a better job," because he's a genius. He knew I had no chance at anything else. I was still waiting to go to court for a couple of felonies. I was still looking at 2 to 5 years in jail, and I had zero experience doing anything. And I had dropped out of college because I thought, "Oh, I'm making 12 bucks an hour at the ambulance. That's, you guys are stupid for writing papers." And so my sponsor said, "Why don't you just go in there and do like smile, show up on time, and do the best crappy job you can do." Not that I was supposed to do a crappy job, but it was a crappy job. And so I made an effort to do that. I made an effort to show up and do the filing and do the stuff and not bitch much, not complain much. And and eventually that guy offered me a full-time job. And a year or so after that, he had me doing something else. And he came to me and he's like, "Hey, here's this little piece of software. Learn this and show me what you know on Friday." So I played around with it. I made a thing that helped me out. And I showed it to him on Friday. And he was super excited about it. About 3 months, he said, "Keep playing with it when you have free time." About 3 months after that, he's like, "All right, Monday morning, wear a suit, pack a bag for a week, meet me at Dallas." Oh. And he took me out and made me a damn consultant. He's like, "You're going to do the grunt work that I don't want to do and learn how to do all the other stuff." And that project went for about 6 months. And with about 2 weeks left, he's like, "All right, I'm starting a new project. You're finishing this one out." And I started a weird series of circumstances career that I did not want. If you had offered it to me, I'd have been like, "Nope, not interested. I'm not a nerd." Turns out I am. And I tell that story mostly because there have been so many little decisions along the way that I have probably said no to that could have grown into something amazing. And there have been so many little things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've said yes to that seemed like a terrible plan that have grown into something amazing. When I met my wife, we were coming back from a ski trip. She was actually working the flight. And a guy in front of me, who's a buddy of mine, he said, "If you don't go ask her out right now, you're a dumb mother," something or other. So even that recommendation I took, which I was not going to. And that's worked out okay so far, at least for me. I don't know about you. It works out great for me so far. But like just saying yes to things in Alcoholics Anonymous. A couple of years ago, I was the phone watch chair at Northern Virginia Intergroup. And the secretary there said, "Hey, I think you should be the chair of Intergroup." And I was like, "Hell no. Thank you for thinking of me." And then I was like, "Oh, I've been asked to be of service. Damn it." So I literally had to call her back. And I was like, "I will put my name in the hat." Nobody else put their name in the hat. So it wasn't even like I beat a bunch of people. I was like, I was just a sucker. And quite honestly, I did not enjoy it. It wasn't fun. And it was what my sponsor actually describes as service. It's inconvenient and doesn't help you at all. It's like this is it. But just like that crappy job that I did way back when, I showed up, I did the things that I was asked to do, and I tried to be of service. And I tried not to change or fix everything. Like, that's not my job. You guys have discussions. I moderate the discussion a little bit, and then we start votes. And then I count votes, which unfortunately most of the time I need help for. And that was all that I did. Now, I will tell you, when that ended, I was super stoked about leaving. But I showed up for it and I did it. And I had some excuses. I traveled and I didn't have to show up, but I did it by Zoom, which I didn't like either. But doing those things somehow help me to be more and more comfortable, especially when there are things I don't want to do, especially when they're uncomfortable. And I'm very grateful. Like, there's no like, "And then I got rich" out of that story. That's how it ends. Because not everything here is for anything, right? It's so that I get to stay sober and I get to be just comfortable enough that I don't have to take a drink. And that's like as good as it gets here, right? On top of that, I get to meet a bunch of people, get to go a bunch of places, and I really enjoy being here. And the last thing I want to say real quick, because I'm out of time here, is I am very a lot when I first got sober, I heard people talking about like, "Oh, I'm so honored to be a part of this meeting," or "honored to be asked to speak." And I just thought that was like words that people threw out. So I didn't say it. Damn it, because I didn't feel it. Wasn't honored. You were honored for having me here. But Like I know that Dale and Billy and a bunch of other folks here, they care a lot about this meeting. And when you guys get a speaker here, good, bad, or different, this is the meeting. And so it is a huge honor that you guys have asked me to be a part of your meeting and that I get to be a part of your lives in tiny little bits and pieces here as we go. So thank you very much. And I appreciate y'all having a great day.